Welcome back to the Nasmyth Hockey Podcast. My co-host is actually covering the game tonight against the Devils and the Islanders, and I'm now once again joined by Dan Sarcini of Islanders Anxiety. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back. Good to talk to you again. I don't know what James is experiencing now in the blue, very blue and orange Prudential Center, but it's fun, and we'll talk about the game here, I guess, that he watched live.
Yeah, you've already recorded an episode that covers the last week of games and all the shenaniganery that happened last week.
Right.
And actually I purposely didn't listen to it because I didn't want to add too much crossover. I'm sure you'll repeat yourself, but I wanted it to be organic as opposed to me getting to that. But it's funny, I was thinking the other day and knowing that you were going to come on, and I was listening to last week's episode, and I'm sitting in the car, or maybe it was it was late on Friday night. I was listening to Weird Islanders about Randy Robitaille, which it just gets me. I when I'm driving and I'm listening to that show, I just get in a trance thinking about the team at that point. I'm like, I need to pay attention to driving. But I always want to jump into the conversation. And it's so funny how a lot of us are on the same wavelength, because you were speaking with, was it Adam Gretz?
Adam Gretz, yeah. Yeah, he's a Penguins writer and a Penguins fan. And
good follow.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going back and forth between Penguins and Islanders. And it was just a great, like, going through some of that. And as our listeners will know, I'm a big Kasperides fan. And I'm, like, waiting for someone to say it. And then you just like squeeze it in there in between a couple of like players. And I'm like, oh, they did it. And it's not really that surprising. I think it was, it's an obvious one, but it's just funny how we're all, we all know the same stuff is probably what it is, but
yeah. And we're all prone to falling down the same rabbit holes, really, is what it is, And like, that's the beauty of Weird Islanders. Like, what started as just what Mike and I would do in a group chat, or before we recorded Anxiety or after we recorded Anxiety or saw each other or whatever, we just decided, wouldn't it be funny if we just talked about Weird Islanders on a podcast? We just have a guest and we just talk. And that's what it comes down to. And, I always tell people when they come on, I mean, you've been on obviously. And, it's just, we start at somebody and we see where it goes, and we end up talking about God only knows who. And then it's my job to kind of, I can get stuck in that trance too, but it's my job to kind of like steer us back into the player at hand enough to make it about him and focus on him. And the Randy Robitaille one was great, because he could have been, like we said on the episode, he could have been a weird anything. Like, he played for so many teams for such a short period of time. I think the only team he played more than 100 games for was the Predators. But other than that, I mean, I didn't even know he played for the Minnesota Wild. Like, who thinks of Randy Robitaille as a Minnesota Wild? Well, he was there for, I don't know, maybe a handful of games at some point. But, if you did a Weird Penguins or a Weird Flyers or a Weird Bruins, he could be, or Weird Thrashers, he could be it. And there were so many ties to him, and Adam was great. And I swear to God, I never thought anybody else other than one of us would pick Randy Robitaille. But when he picked him, I was like, oh, my God, that's so perfect. So, we have a few more episodes to go. The next one is about a player who's actually currently playing, or at least could potentially currently be playing. I'm not even sure, but I'm looking forward to it. We got a few more coming up this year. So it's so much fun that we could keep on going forever. I mean, our list is, you've seen the list. Like, it's a
yeah. I know. I need to sign up for next season. I try to go through them.
Right.
And we pay homage to that. I hope it's understood as such. I started doing like a random number generator at the end of the show.
Right.
Because I want to take part in that. Like, again, I'm sitting in the car and I'm like, oh, I so badly just want to be part of this conversation and chime in. So I was like, we need to find a way to like do this on our own. And it's a lot less, it's very short because we don't have time to research anything. So it's just a random number. And, we just go through it quickly, not every single episode, but when we have a little extra time.
The research is tricky, and some guys, they don't require a lot because they haven't played a lot. And but then there are some guys who, even though their Islanders time was very short, it takes a long time to research. So like Cliff Ronning was a guy who,
that was only a great one.
Yeah. Like, he spent a half a season with the Islanders. There wasn't a whole lot to talk about, but even then, I mean, the guy had like a 15-year career, so we went on and on. But then there are some guys who, the list of notes is, you know, maybe like this big, and that's it, because they're only, you know, a handful of games came with the Islanders and then they were off to Europe or just retired or, you know, disappeared or something. So I enjoy it. It's fun research. It's fun work, but it can, you know, at some point when you're on the second day of it, you're like, wow, this is a lot. Is this really, I hope we use these notes because this is a lot to go on here. But again,
you find clips like you find like actual, I love hearing, it makes it real. Like it's almost like a documentary and that's it, strangely enough. And whether that's intentional or not, over time, you'll have this, this portfolio of all these Islanders, even if you never get to the end of it, of no one else is documenting it quite like that, like Hockey DB or Hockey Reference. Like, yeah, you can tell who was on the team and go through all of that. And people surely remember, but actually documenting it as like archival Islanders that you wouldn't have known about that, you know, other than, and I kind of, it's the podcast equivalent of just getting a random pack of hockey cards back in the day,
basically,
and just be like, I don't know, I guess this guy's on the team, or you know what I mean, and or he's in the yearbook that you used to get, they used to hand out the books or the rosters, and you're like, I don't know, I'm not really keeping track of who's on the team, you know, pre-internet, from one game to the next, let alone one season to the next or something. It's like, I don't know, my favorite people are there still, like I guess that's all I care about.
It's very much remembering some guys, basically. But the clips, I think, do bring it alive. But again, sometimes it's hard to find. Sometimes they're not out there. But when we, you know, I'll look for clips. But then if the person we talk to, you know, I'll look for clips before the episode. But then when we talk to the person, they might remember an actual game on a specific date in a specific season or a specific play that, you know, when you search YouTube, that's what will bring it up. And that's where we'll look for it. And so like that Randy Robitaille game that we talked about in the last episode, which was actually, you know, if you look up Islanders Randy Robitaille, it's not going to come up. But if you searched under whatever it was that I searched under, that was more like I used the date and I forget what date it was. It was February something, I guess, 2007. And I found it and I was able to put the clips in there and get the Robitaille highlights in there. And yeah, you know, I enjoy it. It's fun. And we have some friends who run great YouTube pages that have that kind of stuff and can find it, and you know what's out there. But you know, some of these guys, they played so long ago that it's actually, their stuff isn't on YouTube, and that's what's kind of crazy. You think YouTube is, you know, billion, trillion, million, whatever clips, and then, but yeah, you go to look for one particular Islander, you ain't gonna find it. It's just like, man, it didn't feel like it was that long ago because I remember watching the guy play, but apparently to YouTube it's a long time ago. So
And the point is that it's a player that had a short career, so the odds of finding a clip is super slim. And I'll say this, and we can move on. So speaking of remembering specific games, Mike's a bit of a savant with this.
He's ridiculous. Yeah,
he's ridiculous. My age, and he remembers very specific things about early. Yeah. He must have just been going to a lot of games because I certainly wasn't watching him on TV at 8, 9, 10 years old all the time. Anyway.
He's very good at that, and he's also very good at remembering who else was on that team. That's my thing too, is like, we'll talk about a guy and he'll be like, oh yeah, he was on that, on a line with whatever, and it's another weird Islander, and you're like, really? I didn't even realize they were on the same team. So he's younger than I guess you're about the same age as him, but he's younger than me. And I don't know, my big thing is sort of remembering the feeling around the team at the time, which was usually pretty bleak if we're being honest, but like, you know, a lot of the kind of stuff of, you know, what I was reading in Newsday at the time or what was on, you know, ESPN NHL Tonight at the time or something like that. So, he's great. And we had our live event at Offside NYC a few weeks ago, and his brother and sister were there. And of course, like a good brother and sister, they were telling me how, you know, how important I am into the show and how Mike is really not that important to the show. And I'm like, no, that cannot be further from the truth. We are both the show. Like, I could not, nobody would just listen to me talk about this kind of stuff. And, you know, without him, I couldn't really do this. So, you know, we are, and I know what they're doing, but it was kind of funny that I was the one making sure that Mike's honor was defended while his brother and sister were,
of course,
were cutting him down. But again,
that sounds typical.
Yeah, exactly.
So I did want to say, we kind of joked about a bunch of different things so far. I did want to touch on we joked for a second on Twitter that if things went sideways, that we would just talk about things on Isles eBay just to kind of go through. Do you typically buy some older gear or just like kind of like look through things? I know I'm always looking through stuff just because.
I'm kind of a tourist on Islanders eBay. My eBay buying is mainly old video games and old toys. You can see some right over my shoulder there, my old G.I. Joe toys. And I have a ton of video games too. But it is fun to look around there. I buy a lot of books off of eBay. I do an Islanders book club for our Patreon, so I end up buying some books every once in a while off of eBay. It's just funny how stuff pops up. Like we had bought a toothbrush, I think, for somebody the first year we started looking at it, because it was like, who has an Islanders toothbrush from whatever year it was? It's like that kind of stuff you find there. And you can find jerseys are always fun too. There's a great Twitter account that's called Isles eBay that's just like, you know, you find these misspelled jerseys or like, you know, somebody will write it as a prototype. Meanwhile, it's just some knockoff that somebody bought at TJ Maxx or whatever and had some, you know, name put on the back of it. So it can be, you know, with 50 years worth of stuff, it can be a fun, you know, rabbit hole to fall down. And honestly, if anybody's out there is in the looking for a 50th anniversary commemorative book that was given to season ticket holders, well, let me tell you where to find it. It's on eBay because there's a lot of them out there and they are kind of expensive. But I'm more of a tourist in there. I kind of check stuff just every once in a while. And it gets kind of pricey, to be honest with you. I mean, eBay, the stuff I buy is pretty pricey. But I'm a big flea market goer. In fact, I'm planning another trip at the end of the month with a buddy of mine from work who comes all the way out from Brooklyn. And we go, again, hunting for games mostly. But I've told my wife that if I ever find like the 80s style satin jacket with the snaps, you know, like the Al Arbor style jacket with the snaps and the Islanders logo up here, I may stop going to the flea market forever, because if I can find one of those, that's it. That's all that's left to buy. Like there's nothing left that I could possibly find that would be cooler than that. So, and I would just wear it all the time. Basically, I'd wear it in the house all season long. Yeah. It's like 100%. Be the greatest thing ever. Yeah. So,
yeah, I've seen some, it's not the 80s version, but some of the 90s kind of starter versions of that floating puffy, around.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a little bit. Yeah.
I've definitely poked around and I get some things here and there. I bought some hats. Years ago, I don't want to say it's really hipster of me, before the fisherman thing really popped off, I snagged a bunch of stuff. Someone had actually just sent, I knew someone that sent me one, like a black version of the fisherman jersey, which was weird, from That's Starter.
Cool. Interesting.
And I wound up selling that, and then I bought the wave jersey with the regular Islanders crest, and like I've bought hats and I was about like all the 93 stuff, because I got a Casper Stanley Cup jersey or from that run anyway.
That's
so
cool. That's really cool.
That one was a little pricey, but super worth it. I try not to go too crazy. I might need to pick your brain separately about video games, because I did buy a Nintendo for myself.
Oh, wow.
I found one in pretty good condition. I have my Super Nintendo from when I was a kid and my N64.
That's great.
But I always wanted a Nintendo.
The NES,
There's something about that square controller and playing Mario that just is very
no matter how big your hands get, you can still, it still feels right in your hands.
Yes.
You know, I have one too. Actually, I have a thing called a Retron 5 that plays NES, Genesis games, Super Nintendo games, even plays Japanese versions of those games. And I have a couple of the controllers, the original Nintendo controllers that can plug in the side, and it feels good. My personal favorite is the Sega Genesis. Downstairs, I have a whole wall of Genesis games. I have a ton of NES games too. But and my wife, now I just got a thing that plays TurboGrafx-16 games and Atari Lynx games. And my wife is not too pleased, because now I'm going to be bringing in other old games, and I'm buying Japanese versions, I'm buying the American versions. I'm like, I try not to spend too much, but it does pile up after a while. And then, you know, she's like, why do you need this again? And I'm like, well, because, you know, come on, it's Legendary Axe. It's a classic TurboGrafx game. Of course, she has never heard of it before. But
I mean, if that's your thing, I always think about that. It's like, well, I wouldn't do that. But if that's there, they wouldn't do the thing that I'm doing. I always understand that.
I love the preservation aspect of it. Again, the Genesis was my heyday. That's my favorite console. But there's something about that plastic box with the artwork on the outside, and then the manual inside, and then the, you know, the artwork on the cartridges and the feel of the cartridges. It just brings me right back, and it makes me happy. It's my place of joy, you know. And I mean, I have a Switch and an Xbox Series X too, but there's something about those games that the amount of comfort and joy those games bring me is priceless, basically. So I don't mind spending a few bucks here and there on it. And honestly, the most expensive one I've bought is probably about $70. And those are new. Like, a lot of, there are still companies that make new cartridges. I promise viewers, we're going to talk about the Islanders in a minute, but we are, they make,
we're new catching up here.
Yeah. they make new cartridges. And, there are some companies that were licensed games that came out in the, from the 90s, but were never released here. And so I, you know, can buy those, and they come in deluxe packaging with all kinds of artwork and, you know, seals of authenticity and stuff like that. And so I have a game called, like, Mega Man, the Wily Wars, which is actually a remake of the first three Mega Man games just on the Genesis. And it was only available on a thing called Sega Channel, which was like a very, very early downloadable service that you had for the Genesis. It came with like a modem, and you could download, if your cable company offered it, you can download games right to the Genesis. This was in 1992. So it's like, you know, 15 years ahead of its time. And one of the exclusive games on it was this Mega Man, the Wily Wars. And it took, you know, 30 years for it to come out on a cartridge. And I'm like, I'm buying that. And my wife was like, don't you have Mega Man? I'm like, oh, I have a million Mega Man copies. But this one is this special Genesis one that, you know, hasn't seen the light of day on these shores ever before. So I have to have it. So I bought it, and it's cool. And I think I played it one time, but that's besides the point.
As a vinyl lover and collector,
That's cool. My boss loves vinyl records. He's
I understand the aspect of kind of getting nerdy about it, and I just cataloged pretty much my whole collection, so I understand getting into the nuance of where the pressing is from, what year it was, all the little nuances. Obviously, the artwork, that was my Christmas last year. During that week in between Christmas and New Year's, I just sat on my floor and I cataloged it in Discogs, which is very cool. Talk about a place where you can spend a lot of money. But I cataloged it, but I also was just sitting in front of there. It was very analog. You were holding the things and you were playing them. And I really appreciated the slowness of the day per every, 18 minutes to 20 minutes, and then flipping the record and going through.
I have a Google Sheets. That's all my games. And it's probably 20 or 30 different tabs of different consoles. And I had to, because I found myself buying games that I already own. And I'm like, I need to do something about that. So I didn't even use a cool app like that. I just used Google Sheets and made my own. And it's a little unwieldy, but it has to be done. Because, you know, sometimes now, especially with games, they're digital. So there's some games I own four different times. One's digital, one's on a cartridge, once on a PC, and then once on something else. So it's you got to be careful with it. But, just try not to buy the same thing I already own. And I did it actually just this morning. I did it today. I added a game to my eBay watch list and then realized, wait, I own this. So I was like, why am I buying this again? So I took it off the watch list. I forgot that I owned it.
I've done that on vinyl. We'll move on. But I did this on vinyl. I have Black Sabbath Paranoid.
Nice.
On it, like a special pressing from Vinyl Me.
Wow.
And I haven't opened it because I have an old one that's like super beat to shit, but I'll just listen to that one. I don't even know what this other one looks like, but I really don't do that. I typically will open them, and I don't, unless there's another one that I know eventually would be worth something. I don't know if it's worth it's like, don't save the special candle, just burn it kind of thing. So I'm leaning in that direction. I might just kind of open them, but
that's just the idea of having, like, you could frame it and hang it up. I mean, that's one of my favorite albums ever. So if you had just like a framed copy of Paranoid, like on the back wall back there, that would be just the coolest thing ever.
So in the next room over is where my drum set is. And I do have some things on the wall. I bought a, Long Island Band, Crime and Stereo. I bought their new record and they had like a special edition cover and like something that came with it. And I was just feeling spendy, so I did it. but I actually hung up. I have like the 12x12 LP frames, and I hung
that's
up
cool.
a couple cool things like that. And I have some test pressings from bands that I really like. And
that's your thing.
I totally understand. So,
I'm not a vinyl guy, but I'm a CD guy. Like, I buy CDs and I still put them in my iPhone and listen that way. And my wife is always like, why don't you just we do Spotify? I'm like, but I want to own it. I want to own CD. I don't want to get stuck without Wi-Fi and then have no songs. So I have all these songs, I own them, and that's it. That's the end of the story. Yeah. And especially now, again, going back to the flea market stuff, you go to the flea market, these CDs are so cheap And, you know, it's not unusual to find some of the greatest albums ever for, you know, three for $5 or something like that, or, you know,
oh, yeah,
a piece or something like that. And then you own them forever. And I don't have to worry about Spotify.
I was at a show last night and they just had a box of CDs and it just said free. So I was like, oh, I just like went through, I grabbed a couple. I was like, cool, I guess that's I have cool. these CDs now and I can just,
sure.
I, like you said, I have it. They're going to be in my car for a while now and I'm probably just going to forget about it.
Yeah,
but right. I need to, that there's another box in my mom's house that I need to grab.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. And you'll get it back.
And then I need a CD player.
Yeah.
Okay. So 20 minutes in, we're going to get to the New York Islanders here. I wanted to touch on the Coyote situation, but I'm sure we'll get into a whole rabbit hole on that. I think I understand being in that situation, talking about something that happened a long time ago, to go into the Islanders conversation, that we were really close to that. And having to make the decision, you're going to follow the team and watching all this stuff was heartbreaking. I don't relate all the way, but I remember thinking like this team could just leave at any moment. And so if you want to add anything, I don't know if you and Mike spoke about it this week too, but
yeah, we went into a whole extended thing on it yesterday on the last episode of Anxiety. And yeah, it's just the thing about it to me is like, it sucks for the fans that are going to have to watch this team move. It sucks for the players that apparently don't sound like they want to move. Some of the business staffers, according to Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts this morning, are going to, or I should say, yes, Monday morning, are going to stay with the AHL team. And that's all, you know, it all sucks. It's not going to make anybody happy, really. I mean, maybe the players at some point will be happy, but at first they've got to like tell all their wives and kids and families that, oh yeah, by the way, now we got to move to Salt Lake City. Like, that's crazy. But to me, the craziest thing about it is the NHL is going to give this same owner, Alex Morello, a chance to own an expansion team, you know, within a 5-year window and bring it to Arizona. If he can like secure the same garbage that we've been hearing for 15 years, like, oh, if he can secure the land and get an arena built, this guy hasn't been able to do this all this time.
That was the exact note that I wrote down.
Yeah. Like he hasn't paid bills. He's kind of been very combative with different entities. Like what I said with us was like, you know, with the Islanders thing, you had a kind of a contained cast of characters that we all knew about. Like Kate Murray obviously was a big cat, you know, character. Charles Wong, obviously, before them was Ed Mangano, and Tom Galata was the, Tom Suozzi. Like, it was kind of the same sort of few people around. With the Coyotes, it seems like it's somebody new all the time. Like, the mayor of this town, or the, you know, the governor here, or this guy, or whatever.
NHL owned the team. Like, it just was always devolved into chaos.
Exactly. And they're having, like, town hall meetings, and it's not, and they're having, you know, we had one referendum that failed. They seem to have one, like, every year. There's some kind of vote that fails. And so, to me, that's just salt in the wound. Like, it's bad enough that this team is going to leave. But then who's going to want to trust this guy to build a new team here for these fans? Like, that they've been through enough. And my other point that the thing that also drives me kind of nuts is, like, do the Coyotes have as many fans as like the Leafs or Canadians or Rangers or Red Wings or whatever? No, frankly, they don't. Frankly, neither do the Islanders. But those people care about that team just as much as a Steve Dangle cares about his team. Like, you know, and you never hear that part. And these people are really going to kind of go through it. And on one hand, the saga is over. But on the other hand, like you said, I mean, who are they going to follow the team? Are they going to, you know, wait for a new team? Are they going to follow the AHL Roadrunners? Are they going to, you know, pick a different thing? I have a friend of mine at work who's one of the other big hockey fans, and he's from Hartford, and he was a huge Whalers fan. And when they moved to Carolina in 2002 or whatever it was, or no, sorry, 1997, he wasn't going to follow a team in North Carolina. The hell with that. And so he ended up, you know, rooting for the Red Wings. And now he's a big Red Wings fan, you know, because like he wasn't going to just follow that. That wasn't his team anymore. It was somebody else's team. So let them be somebody else's team. So, you know, it's tough and it just sucks. And the fact, you know, making it so much worse is that the NHL still wants to be in bed with this guy. And I have no idea why. And, you know, I guess I was thinking about it this morning and while listening to 32 Thoughts, I wonder if people would have said the same thing about Charles Wong had the Islanders moved and, you know, they've given them a chance to put an expansion team on Long Island or something like that. But
I mean, that wasn't necessarily, he was doing all the right things.
Yeah,
I don't think it was, if I'm remembering correctly, and I don't mean to try to rewrite anything, and maybe you remember, maybe you don't. I don't think he was asking for public money.
No,
he was just saying, I want to build something essentially where the Coliseum was on useless land.
Yeah.
and do something with it. That's actual economic development. Not to really get into that. What he was asking for, I believe, in Phoenix was very different for wherever they are, Scottsdale.
Wong, I mean, we never really got to this point, but he was saying it was going to be privately funded, and it was going to be a huge, big complex. That was his problem, was that he tried to bite off more than he can chew. And like, it wasn't just a Coliseum. It was going to be housing and like medical laboratories and, you know, buildings and all that, office buildings and all that kind of stuff, which again is like revitalization of what is essentially just a giant parking lot with an arena in the middle.
I pictured it like the Deer Park outlets with a hockey rink, you know, like at least, or it was something, it's new, it's whatever. Right. And it's, there's a train station. I don't know if that was ever going to get one, but that was the goal.
Right. And, but the problem was that the small minded, you know, people in charge at the time only wanted the arena, and Wong's whole thing, and he was 100% right, was that we can't make money if it's just an arena. Like, it's not going to work that way. And now you see what he meant with UBS Arena. Like, people complain about the prices, the ticket prices are high, the food prices are high. Yeah, that's the way it works. Like, unfortunately, that's how it is. But you also are going to have Belmont Park. You're also going to have this retail village that they're going to build. You're also going to have a hotel that's right there. So all of that stuff rakes in money to the team, which the Islanders never had the chance to get because they only had this one arena. And that's why in the last days of the Coliseum, I'm sure you'll remember, every square inch of it had an ad on it. Like, you know, if you went to the bathroom, like the handle had an ad on it, the urinal had an ad in it. Like, there was a place that didn't have Cablevision or, you know, Newsday or whatever, because that's the only way they could have made any money. And so, you know, Wong stuck with it. And unfortunately, they had to move to Barclays Center. And that's what's funny. Like, I was thinking, like, for the Islanders, they just had to move to Brooklyn. The Coyotes had to move to Utah, which is not close to, you know, Arizona. But the big difference too with the Coyotes was they got an arena. They built it in Glendale. That was the whole thing. Was this was supposed to have been squashed 15 years ago. But then what happened was nobody wanted to drive to Glendale. It was too far away.
It's like the Senators as well. Although I think there's a subway line there now, or, you know, Metro line or something. But
like, it was nowhere. So remote that nobody wanted to go. And so you just created a different kind of boondoggle. And then that ended up with them in Mullet Arena with, you know, with the college rink and all that. And now someplace else. So, you know, on one hand, I feel for, you know, these guys trying to get this arena deal done. But on the other hand, it's like, dude, you couldn't make it work. Like, why? And why wouldn't he just, if he's getting paid $1 billion for the NHL for his team, who are then going to turn around and sell it to this guy in Salt Lake City for $1 billion plus, why wouldn't he just walk away? They just paid you $1 billion. Just leave. Go to a beach. I don't know. Sit on it. Don't do anything. Why would you do this all over yourself again? I don't really get it. But Arizona is a big place, and there's a lot of people there. So I think as a market, it still has a viability, but man, I don't know. These guys have played their last card. I don't know why they want to keep
going. I agree. I think the silver lining, and just because I was frustrated with it today, at least the fans following the team to Salt Lake City won't have to worry about blackouts on ESPN. As I struggle to just get my thing to my ESPN to
right.
They don't have to worry about that. And I was like, they made the team was in Kansas City. I wouldn't have to worry about this. Although I don't know that I would be an Islander fan if they did. I definitely feel for that. Like, you know, understand the Hartford person.
Yeah.
Hell, it was hard to be an Islander fan in like 2010. Like, there was just nothing to watch. I know, as aggravated as we are about this season,
yeah,
at least there was some kind of substance there, as you know, good or bad. That was just as Wonder Bread boring as it ever was. And even with, you know, as Mike says, the guy who was drafted before Victor Hedman.
Well, 2011 was the referendum year, and that was an exciting year. That was the Grabner season. They had named Jack Capuano head coach. They had Al Montoya was the goalie for half a season there. So that was a pretty exciting season, and it seemed like things were going in the right direction, and then the referendum failed and the whole thing. But my contingency plan was always Buffalo. Like, I was like, if the Islanders move to Kansas City or wherever it was, or, you know, to me, I don't know if I could root for them again. I probably would have rooted for the Sabres, because I couldn't root for the Rangers, that's for sure. And I think the Hurricanes had already moved by that point. And, you know, I didn't want to root for the Devils. I would have felt really weird. So that was, and Pat LaFontaine is my favorite player. So it would have been very natural to glom onto the Sabres. But having seen what's happened to the Sabres since, and what's happened to the Islanders, thank God I didn't have to root for the Sabres, because I would have been in really bad shape. But
a different misery for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
As a kid, I had my playoff teams when the Islanders would inevitably not make it or not make it past the first round. I had these kind of contingency plans.
Sure, me too.
Yeah. And you know, I was an Avalanche guy, which I definitely want to speak to Mike about, as he was on the Red Wings side of the whole saga. That's interesting. But yeah, I think I like the Devils. Roger was very exciting. So like watching like the Cup was local, and you're 12 years old.
I went to a bunch of Devils playoff games during that era, because like you said, the Islanders never made it, and it was a short drive away. And I have a good friend who's a Penguins fan, and so they played the Penguins a couple of years in the playoffs. So we would just go to Devils playoff game, you know, just to watch what a playoff game was like, even though it wasn't my team, and it was fun. Yeah. I never disliked the Devils, you know, during the Lamoriello
era. I was just jealous.
I was very jealous. Yeah, like you said, why couldn't my team do that? Why couldn't my team play defense? I don't know. These guys are the only ones who seem to do it. My team doesn't know how, but.
Yeah. And then I followed Kasparis to Pittsburgh, and was exciting to watch him there. He scored that overtime goal against Buffalo.
That's right.
And obviously, I mean, like, yeah, I think Buffalo in the period that you're, I guess this is like way, way post Hasek. I would have understood if it was like 1999. I was like, oh hell yeah, everyone loves Dominik Hasek. Like, you just, everyone had goalie pads and was just flopping around in the street pretending to be Dominik Hasek. I definitely would relate there. But yeah, different by 2011, 12, whatever. A little bit of a different story. Anyway, down to business. I want to start as everyone knows, Rob Trab on Isles Twitter. He posted this. And I think it's an interesting way to go into this. I just found it right before we logged on here. 28 wins in regulation, 16 overtime shootout losses, 23 blown third period leads, the NHL's worst penalty kill, 105 second period goals allowed. Yikes, I actually didn't, that one, I'm reading it for the first time right now. a minus 17 goal differential, two separate six-game losing streaks. Somehow, though, we are looking at a playoff run, or at least we made the playoffs. And a season that has felt so terribly long. Now, as we joked before we hit record, lasts at least five more games.
Yeah.
And I want to get your take on, you know, do you have things that you can even be excited about before we dive into the Devil's game in the last week of what kind of craziness? Are there things to be excited about, or is it just kind of like worry and a little bit of dread, or is it just like a mix of everything?
At the current moment, I think it's joy. I think it's relief. I think probably more than anything else, that Wednesday's game is certainly less important now than it would have been. Thank God. You know, the Islanders for once did us a favor and did the right thing and came out, and you know, it wasn't a perfect game when we talk about it, but they needed to win a game and they won it. And this was one of the easier wins of the year, you know, from a nerves and anxiety point of view. So right now I think it's fine. They are going to play the Hurricanes. The Rangers have won, so they're going to win the President's Trophy. So that locks Carolina into second place. And so the Islanders are going to play them. Am I looking forward to playing the Hurricanes? No, quite frankly, because I hate them and I hate the way they play, and I don't want to watch a repeat of last year's series. But, you know, it's funny because as much of a roller coaster as the Islanders season has been, like you said, six-game losing streak, seven-game, you know, six-game winning streak, whatever. Now, you know, if they win tomorrow, they're going to have won, what, nine of their final 10 games of the season or something like that? So, you know, it's they've won, I guess it's they had won six in a row, lost the Rangers, and now it's, you know, seven out of eight. So, you know, it's also been a roller coaster for us. And like, we were asking ourselves not too long ago, do we even want this team to make the playoffs?
And like, that was really what I was getting at, is like, you know, there's this underlying kind of thing where I don't know what we're rooting for. Like, we've seen, especially because it was like all signs were pointing to they were probably going to make, because they had to go on such a run that they would probably make the third in the division.
Right.
Or the second wild card. Either way, I was like, they're going to play Carolina again. And we've seen this movie before.
Yeah.
We don't need a repeat.
Right. And it's not that the Hurricanes, and I, you know, I say this with all due respect, I'm not going to trash talk these guys. It's not that the Hurricanes are some kind of unbeatable team. Like, the Islanders can't be, they've beaten them twice already this year. Don't forget. I mean, took overtime, but they still beat them. But it's just, we, you know, we've seen this movie before. But the thing about the Islanders that makes the Hurricanes such a bad matchup for them is that the biggest issue for them is that they're just sloppy. like they're just sloppy. They turn the pucks over all the time. They're prone. Even tonight against the Devils, a team whose season has been over for months now, like they start slow. The Devils had like, what was it, the first six shots of the game. The Islanders didn't have a shot for until 8 minutes into the game. And of course,
they had 11 shots through 45 minutes.
Yeah, like they did. It wasn't a good game. I mean, the attempts, I guess, you know, the whatever, Corsi, whatever you want to call it, were a little bit closer, but it's not like the Islanders like dominated them. They just ended up scoring all the goals. And so I'm playing pretty smart defense. You know, that's probably
it was a matter of fact game. They kind of just were like, we need to win this game.
Right.
Nothing's. Don't do anything too stupid. Right. I've only managed to do that a little bit in the second period because, which was finally, I'll say, was finally acknowledged by Brendan and Butch.
That what?
In the beginning, like about their second periods being bad. I hadn't really heard it before. And they're like, yeah, all season this has been an issue or, you know, something to that effect. And I was like, wow, good for them for finally being like, well, we never, we didn't see this coming. It's like, you're watching more of this than any of us. Yeah. How do you not see that?
I was so mad at Shannon Hogan the other day because in that Rangers game, that second period of Tuesday's Rangers game, when, you know, the Islanders were gangbusters in the first period, were absolutely terrible in the second period, and she was on with Matt Molson in between periods and then was like, not the period we expected out of the Islanders. And I was like, Shannon, it's game 78. We've seen this 78 times. How could you not expect this team to not come out in the second period? They do this all the time. But yeah, no, that's a perfect example. And then also, like you mentioned before, or Rob's tweet mentioned before, their penalty killing has been terrible all year. Now, in fairness, they were 3-for-3 tonight against the Devils. It actually looked really good. And they've looked pretty good on the penalty kill lately. But of course, what does that mean? The power play has been pretty terrible, although they scored a power play goal tonight. So if they can go 3-for-3 on the penalty kill and score a power play goal in every game, then they might be okay. But there's just so much about this team that is, I don't even know what the word would be. It's just, it's not tight. It's too loose, I guess is probably the best way to put it. But
and Carolina beefed up the team. So it's not like they're not worse than they were last year.
No.
That's how I'm thinking about it. It's like, oh, okay. Now they have, they didn't wind up with Kuznetsov, did they?
No, but they did get Kuznetsov and they got Jake Kensel, obviously.
Yeah, so it's like, all right, so now you have a team that you couldn't contain last year for all other than 7 minutes where you scored six goals, you know, over the course of two games. That was it. Yeah. So now you have to worry about two more players that are just going to put in the back of your net every time you make a mistake.
The big advantage the Islanders have over the Hurricanes in a series, and we'll do a playoff preview. I'm sure you and James will do a playoff preview. We don't need to get too far into this, but obviously the goaltending, you know, if that's a big difference. And like the Hurricanes have done very well with Freddie Anderson and Antti Raanta, obviously, and Peter Kuchenkov. Yeah. But like, you know, the Islanders have two of the best. And now Sorokin looks like he's back in his form, which is good. He looked great against the Rangers. He's going to play on Wednesday against the Penguins. Hopefully he continues that. And so that's the big advantage for the Islanders. And like we have seen an Islanders goaltender steal a playoff series in our lifetime. You all remember Thomas Greiss 2016 versus the Panthers. That the Islanders won that series thanks to mainly two guys, Thomas Greiss and again the guy drafted ahead of Victor Hedman. And so it's it can be done, but the Hurricanes are going to be tough. And the thing is, if you turn the puck over in your own zone, or you don't get it deep enough into their zone, or you bump into one of your teammates in the neutral zone, it's going to go back to the
way. Or all three of you run into each other in the neutral zone. Yeah.
And the thing is, one turnover in your own zone leads to, because of the way the Hurricanes play, it's going to lead to like 10 different Hurricane shots in 30 seconds.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Take the action on any of the NHL's upcoming games, including Lightning Panthers, Rangers Islanders, or Avalanche Oilers. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for gambling. Call 888-789-7777. Or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 186 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League.
What worries me, really, it's not even all of the, even like, just to focus on the defense, it's really like, I don't trust Aho or Bortuzzo, because they're the ones that are making all of these mistakes. That was Saturday against the Rangers, just letting chances go, and that's what really is what is worrying me. I think I'm the other Riley's been great.
He's really good tonight too. Yeah,
yeah. He skates. It's not as nice looking as Letty was when he was skating, but as graceful. But it's good enough. And somebody to actually carry the mail in a different way. It was desperately needed. But the Aho Bortuzzo thing, I really don't know who the better option is, because both make me terribly nervous.
Yeah. Now, here's my hope, and this is impossibly naive. And again, I will definitely mention this on our eventual episode of Islanders Anxiety. The hope is that these guys as a collective can look at each other after Wednesday's game. Again, win or lose, it really doesn't matter for them at this point. And basically say, okay, look, we made the playoffs. Like, we made it through this 82-game slog. It was hugely imperfect. Our coach got fired. We have a new coach. You know, we've been through hell and back with these guys. We've had guys hurt. We've had guys, you know, show up, you know, or disappear in weird places. But now it's different. And now it is for real. And so maybe the team that we see when the playoffs start, whether it's Saturday or Sunday for them, we'll find out, I guess, in a couple of days, actually shows up and plays like a real NHL team, and maybe tightens up those turnovers and tightens up that neutral zone play and tightens up the, you know, gets those pucks in deep when they're supposed to get those pucks in deep. So it's possible, but it's, you know, they say you can't flip a switch, but maybe these guys can. I don't know, but they didn't last year, where they were sloppy all season long, made the playoffs, and then were sloppy in the playoffs, and then got beat by one of the most embarrassing overtime series winning goals you'll ever see, which is, you know, two normally really good players kind of, you know, just crossing each other up. So I don't know. Right now, it's cool that they're done. We can relax. We're going to have a nice Tuesday and Wednesday. Hopefully if they can beat the Penguins and keep them out of the playoffs.
Oh, it's delicious.
That would be the best. That almost might be better than an actual playoff series.
Oh, yes. To be spoilers after you've already locked up your spot.
Right.
Especially against the Penguins just a chef's kiss moment for Islander fans. I know Michael loved that. I can't wait to hear if, you know, after this week. I think you just going back to like flipping a switch, if there was ever a moment where Patrick Waugh will truly shine, it could be in this moment. I think one of the bigger disappointments I'm trying to like project this onto the team, you know, rightfully or wrongly, but when they were going through the 6-game skid, they're not playing well for this guy. How embarrassing that must have been, and disappointed they must have just been in themselves that they're playing in front of this Hall of Fame guy. And this isn't like Gretzky, where it was like, I don't understand why you don't know, just know this, right? Like, I'm the greatest of all time. Like, do the thing. I don't think that's what he's doing, especially because he's a goalie and he just understands the game differently. And I just kept sitting there thinking how embarrassing it must be to face that guy every day in practice and every day on the bench and every shift you go back and you know you fucked up. And he's just there. He's just a presence. Like, he knows how to win better than anybody. To go to the playoffs now, if it's a clean slate and just burn the tape, it really does. It's irrelevant. No one will remember the regular season if you make a dent in the playoffs this year. Even if you make it to the second round, I think that would it be far and away what the expectations were, especially towards the end. In the beginning, they were second in the Metro. You're like, okay, this team could really do something.
Yeah.
Maybe they really are as good on the ice as they are on paper. But in the playoff series, I'm really hoping this is where Waugh can shine the most and say, not a lot of you really know what it takes to get here. Bortuzzo is the only player that has won a Stanley Cup on this team.
Right.
And really the only one other than the Islanders that have went to back-to-back conference finals that have ever even had a taste. And this is a very different roster than those rosters. I've tried to make that abundantly clear on the show. I think we get caught up in that. Certainly ESPN, who's not watched a game in 3 years, it seems, every single time. But like Wach can actually be like, look, like almost bring in the Conn Smythe. Like, I know what I'm talking about. You need to buy in. Like you need to know how important this is that we focus and get down to business.
I mean, maybe that's the case. Maybe they did look at each other. I mean, I know obviously Barzell is taken very, very much like into Waugh being the coach is like a huge thing for him. And he's played well since he took over. Palmieri's played very well as well. So maybe he feels that same way. But I'll be honest, like, I don't know how this team relates to each other. And I want to know, like, I really wish there was like a fly on the wall situation or like a, you know, a behind the scenes. Obviously I'm thinking of this is the wrong team to be thinking, cause they're never going to do anything like that. But I just don't know how these guys relate. Mike and I have, you know, one of the early things we talked about was calling them the uncles because
I knew that was coming.
These guys have been on the teams for so long that everybody's kids call each other, you know, Uncle Cal or Uncle Anders or Uncle Matt or whatever. So like they're really tight. And in some ways, that's beautiful. Like, I wish I was that tight with my coworkers, you know, when we were all together all these years and went through all these wars and stuff. But at the same time, there has been a lot of points at this season where it looked to me, and I mean, we've talked about this extensively on Anxiety, that like somebody's got to have a tough conversation with one of the uncles and be like, bro, you are not carrying your weight and you've got to pick it up and get shit done. And that was one of my things with Barry Trotz, where he talked about, you know, everybody talks about accountability and they talk about it from a standpoint of like management, you know, making players accountable or whatever, coaches make. That's not the case. The players have to make themselves accountable and hold themselves accountable. So like you do your job so that the guy next to him can do his job and the guy next to him can do his job. And if everybody's doing the right thing, then you will go far. And if one guy's slacking or one guy's not really not carrying his weight or doing what we're talking about now, the whole thing starts to fall apart. And I mean, how many shifts have we seen this year where one line comes out, doesn't do anything, doesn't get a chance, just kind of skating around. They skate off the ice. The next line comes out. They try and do something. They don't do anything, skating around. You know, they're stuck in their own zone. Another guy comes out. Maybe they get something going, but then, you know, nothing happens and they got to go back out. And then it's just a cycle all over again. So it seems to me that these guys really do care about each other and care about being Islanders. And that's great. But sometimes that's just not enough. And sometimes you just got to, you got to pull yourself together and play the way you know how to play. And I don't want to hear that like, oh, they're older now. Well, yeah, so am I. So are you. Like, we're all older, but like, not, these guys aren't 50 years old. Like, they're still in the prime, they're still young men that they can go out there and play. And so, this is again where, again, I'm being very naive, but I am hopeful that they can find that aspect of themselves and write whatever wrong and forget about it and just be like, throw out the first 82 games, forget about it. Now we're starting from scratch and now we can do the things that we need to do because we're here and we fought through.
I wonder if, because you sparked something for me, I was trying to make it somewhat relatable, and just because we're obviously not professional athletes and no, you know, try to figure out what that's like. And I am on a beer league team now that for years we, you know, it wasn't really fun to be there and I really didn't want to play anymore. It made it really hard to be there. Mm. And the last couple of years, it's a really good group. And there was a 10 PM game last night. I really didn't want to go. And I'm like, you know what? I kind of just want to go, you know, we're not best friends. Like some people hang out after they golf and you know, whatever, but he's like, get a beer afterwards or, you know, shitty bar food beforehand or whatever to make your stomach hurt while you're skating.
Right.
And you know, it makes it really fun to be there. But I wonder about this team. Are they more like high school friends who, when you're an adult, you're like, well, we just know each other.
Yeah.
Like we wouldn't be, if you met them now, you probably wouldn't be friends.
Mm.
But now that you are, or like we like cousins you were really close with when you were little and then now you're not anymore because you're adults and you've, you know, even if you live close together, sometimes you just grow apart. You're just different people. You live different lives. You went to different schools or whatever differences that you had. Like, yeah, over time, like, I guess they're tight, but like a group of high school friends, you know, that, yeah, there's just a lot in common because you have history.
Right.
That doesn't mean there's a future, to be really kind of cliche about it. It doesn't mean that there's something to actually hold on to other than Like, it's almost the Ron Swanson work proximity associates. It's like, yeah, after a while you become friends, but it's like, is it just because you've been together, or is it because you're actually friends?
Yeah,
they seem like an actual family.
Yeah, I was just gonna say
functional, you know. Yeah,
they see, but that's the thing. I think that they're actual friends, and that's what makes having those hard conversations so hard. It's like, you don't want to tell your friend, dude, you're being a jerk, you know, or like, you know, and the other thing too is like, well, most of the time we have friends, they don't work with you. Like, you have people you work with, and maybe they're your friends and you like them and you hang out with them. But then you have your friends who, in some case, I mean, I've had the same best friend since the second grade. So, like, you know, we have two other guys in our group that we've been friends with, both of us, since the sixth and seventh grade. So, like, we've known each other for a very, very, very long time. And, like, you know, it's hard sometimes to be like, dude, you're being a jerk here, you know? But, like, that's like, you're not doing it in a work context. You're doing it in a friend context. Somebody's playing a card, you know, playing games, like, or being loud or something like that. When you work together, that's a different thing. And, like, you know, you have to tell somebody you're not playing the, because to me, I find it very hard to believe that these guys don't know when they are, as Mike and I have said many times on Anxiety, playing like assholes. Like, they know what that, they know when they're being too passive in their own zone. They know when they're turning the puck over. They know when they're letting the other team just zip through the neutral zone untouched and unfettered and giving up, you know, having 2 minute shifts in their own zone and giving up a million shots all at once. And, you know, getting, just squandering opportunities and not spending enough time in their zone. I can't imagine that they don't know that that's wrong. But they've got, somebody's got to step up and be like, this is wrong. We can't do this anymore. And like, you have to, and I'm not, you know, I'm not saying that Lane Lambert didn't deserve to lose his job because he was not sort of, you know, fostering confidence in the fan base, to say the least. But, you know, when they were doing that stuff under Wah, I was like, man, really? Like, what is going on? That's when I started getting very, very angry and very, very frustrated.
Yeah. And
like,
you used the word rotten, and that to me, really resonated. And I for Lambert's entirety behind the bench, I said, it's, yes, there's a leadership problem, but it's not just behind the bench, it's on the ice.
That's,
where's Anders Lee, where's Clutterbuck? You have to, leadership means that there's an understanding between you and the people that you're with, whether that's at work, and that there are going to be moments, and sometimes you just need to listen. And sometimes you just need to let that person do what they need to do, and you need to follow directions. And again, even with Wah, you must know, but how are you doing? How are you not motivated to change? And so much of it is, it's not effort, right?
No.
It's not necessarily, you see a guy trying so hard and they're not going very fast. Like, they're just, it's a lot of effort. It's a lot of just, you know, elbows and knees are all over the place. Yeah, I mean, they're trying. I don't think it's lack of effort. It's focus. Like, they just didn't have that level of focus that you really need. That's really the biggest concern going into the playoffs. And you see it in spurts, but you also see these long stretches. These second periods are 40 minutes apiece, it feels like. Just of, God, if it's not one thing, it's another, and just in your own way. And
There's too many games where they let the other team, and, you know, I've talked about this on my Twitter account too. Like, there's too many games where they've let the other team dictate the terms and not pushed back on themselves. And then at the end, after they've lost, been like, you know, I've heard, how many Islanders have we heard at the end of a game say, well, we knew they were going to come out with some urgency, and so we had to weather the storm. Well, it's like, yeah, but you guys can show some urgency too. And if you knew they were
stopping you,
right? Like, if you knew they were going to come out with some urgency, why didn't you push back and make that urgency harder to come by? Why didn't they just why did they get to determine the tempo of the game? Because they had the urgency. You guys have urgency too, and you have a say in this. You are playing the game. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, it's just too much of that. And, you know, I'm not saying that a players only meeting is a cure all for it, because I mean, we've seen teams have them and nothing happens, but we heard none of that. We heard no pushback, no players only meeting. There was the one players meeting that Cal called on the bench in that Rangers game, and then they gave up 13 shots in the period. And like, yeah, okay, they won the game, and I guess they played okay, but like, it doesn't sound like that, you know. I don't know what Cal said, but I'm sure it wasn't go give up 13 shots in this period and still come out, you know, hopefully Anders can get an empty net goal and we win the game. Like, that wasn't it. So I don't know. And that's, you know, again, it got frustrating when the same stuff happened under Waugh. You started thinking of like, maybe these guys are country club. Maybe they are just too comfortable and they just, who cares who the coach is? What difference does it make? It's just, they're just going to do the same things that they want to do, but they righted it again. They've had now two lengthy winning streaks under Waugh here at the end of the season. They made the playoffs and get one game earlier than they made the playoffs last year. So I guess that's a feather in their cap.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of, and to get into some of the games last week, specifically the Ranger games, it's a lot of, it seems like a feeling of it. Things just didn't go our way. And you have the ability out. There are two teams. You happen to be one of them, in case you didn't know. And you can go out there and have a game plan. I kind of like that perspective of, you're like, what's the game plan going into this game? And it seems like it's always the same thing. And at the end, they're like, yeah, you know, we did what we do, and we stuck to our game plan, and it just didn't go our way tonight. And that adjust. Like that's on ice leadership. That's behind the bench. That's just being a professional. I've never just gone through my work day and something pops up and I go, I don't know. Well, I just do it this way. So I don't know what to tell you. Like, I guess just this is what it is now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a team that's going to, well, I'm trying to think of a recent loss. Luckily it's been a while. Probably against a game against the Flyers. Like, oh, we knew they were going to come out and I could have, I think they wound up maybe winning that game, with Fedotov coming in, but they could have just as easily. And I think you even mentioned this on Anxiety. Like that could have, we heard that, that post game.
Yeah.
Like we absolutely know what could have been said.
Yeah.
Following that. And if the game plan is, we're going out and we're going to play Wednesday, you know, you want to go into the playoffs with all these wins, feel good, get Sorokin a win.
Yeah.
Presumably he's starting on Wednesday. And probably a topic we should discuss here, but you know, go out there and see, like, dude, don't touch the puck. Everyone's the fourth line. Go out there, make them go 200 feet. I mean, again, peewee or Bantam level hockey stuff. Right. Like, make them have to look over their shoulder every time they touch the puck.
Well, I'll give an example of a game like that was the game that was going on while we had our live event at the Offside Tavern, which was the 4-1 loss to Tampa Bay. They had lost, I think, the two games before that the Lightning had, and the Islanders had won the game in you know, Florida into or in Sunrise to stop the bleeding. And then all of a sudden they go into Tampa and they lose 4-1. And, you know, they never really had a chance. Like they took a 1-0 lead, but it was kind of unearned. And then the Lightning just took the game over and just ran it out from there. And again, it's like, yeah, they had some urgency. They wanted to right their own ship, but your ship wasn't exactly right either. So, but yeah, it's been tough. And again, I just, you know, these guys have been around for so long that, we are in a very strange position because we've watched this same team, it feels like, for so long. And I don't know if any other team in the league gets this where, you know, we rarely ever have young guys come up. Kyle McLean had a great game today, and he's the one young guy we've had come up. We had Hudson Fashing last year, who hasn't really been as good, although he's looked okay so far in the last couple of games. But like, it's, you know, we don't have this sort of churn of new blood coming in. The Islanders are the same blood. And it's been a pretty successful blood. I mean, they made the playoffs 5 out of 6 years, so it hasn't been bad at all. But it's just a weird scenario where these guys, like you said, you want to give them credit for doing these things, but at the same time, there are times when they play like they barely know each other. But it's like, you guys have been on the same team for 12 years. Like, how is that even possible? It's just
they're just going through the motions.
Yeah,
Showing up, and I know I'm trying to just to. You know, I tend to just try to relate to things the best that I can. And the only way that I can, you know, being in a, not playing a sport professionally, not that I've been a musician professionally, but being in a band and having those hard conversations, because you're not necessarily friends when you start. Right. Like I've been in groups and you're not, it's not like your high school or college band where, just again, the proximity of the people, you play an instrument also, you can do that. And in a lot of cases, the older that you get, you're playing in a band and you may know people like as friends or peripherally through music, but you may not have. I'm in a band now with four guys. I've never really hung out with before. And it's hard to critique each other. I was in the band that I was in before this. I didn't really know them. I knew one of them. It's real. And we had a couple members in and out and guitarists, whatever, but it's really hard to critique, especially when you're creating something and art and sports aren't exactly the same, but
at the
end, you're creating a win. Like you're all working towards something specific. it's a lot like really any job, but it's when it's art and it's something that's feels somewhat organic, like any, it could go any way at any point. Work is very like, do what you're supposed to do. You stay in your lane. You should probably be okay. Right. Barring some kind of an emergency, which I've become all too accustomed to, but I think it's with art, like, yeah, it's really hard to critique something. Like they bring it to the table and it's the thing. And like a shift, like they did the thing and you come back and maybe they really did try hard and it was just a mistake, but
well, nothing's worse than like,
to like critique it.
Yeah, nothing's worse than like putting a lot of work into something and then having somebody go, nah, I don't know.
Like, no, I get redlined for a living, right? Like that's my whole job. And like, so I try not to like, I can take the personal stuff out of there, but you know, like I wrote a cool drum part recently and we're doing it. And he's like, you know, for the second verse, we really, like, I'm thinking something else. And I'm like, dude, I really love that.
Yeah.
And it's hard to like, you know, are you going to be a Ringo Starr where you're just the I'm a drummer, like you're just gonna
hanging around
if well like be there but like everyone appreciates it, like the people if you know kind of musician stuff, or you're gonna push back and is it gonna make the song better? And you have to make these choices, I think, when you're thinking about your individual game and again being focused and as a team, like who's bringing them together, that's not necessarily your coach. And when I was coaching, that was something. You have to show up and be ready. This is not something you're responsible for you. Collectively, we have an obligation to show up that way for each other. That's it. Follow what our game plan is and move forward and we'll adjust. Yeah. Who's on it? Who's not having a good game? Who's grabbing their stick too tight?
Yeah.
Who's cold or whatever. It does. I don't know what that dynamic is. I frankly, you know, a professional sports team, I've never been close to, so I don't fully understand.
But also this team is unlike any other team. Cause again, they've been around for so long that it's gotta be hard to have those kind of, I am a manager in my job too. And I think I'm absolutely terrible at it, but like, you know, there are times when you got to tell somebody, hey man, you got to do this better. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You know, this team is very odd. It's definitely different than a team that we've seen in our lifetime, because you know we were so used to these sort of transient teams for a long time. Then the mercenary teams happened. Then it was the rebuild teams with all the young guys that we all kind of expected to be the core of a Stanley Cup contender. That didn't happen, and now these guys are the core, and they've just been here forever. So it's so weird. Whereas again, most teams have kind of at least a couple of new guys every year. The Islanders almost never do. So
it's been happening so intermittently. Right, because it really is thinking that Bevilier's not around and Bailey's not around, and it's going back a little bit further. But Boychuk and Letty and Eberle. All these Eberle, there are a lot of these players over time. I mean, you can even, even players that predated the runs, right? Like, and thinking about that, it is a very different team in that respect. It's over half is different. It doesn't feel like that.
Right.
And maybe, you know, whether, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, Lewis found guys that just fit the mold. Right. So it does feel like a lot of these players have been. Bortuzzo just feels like he's been here.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Riley, too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's been this season, but yeah, you could have been like, were they on that? Who was the third pair at that, you know, like who's Scott Mayfield now? Like he's a guy that's been around and you're like, oh, yeah, that guy's, he's a person on this team and just
he's going to be around for 6 more years and too.
That's a different debate in the offseason. Yeah, oh God. Yeah. They weren't really better with or without him. I said this earlier in the season and maybe with the last time that you were on, for better or for worse, it did not matter for this team this season. Now that they made the playoffs, it did not matter who was in the lineup. They were fucking bad. Whether it Bortuzzo or Aho or this, the line changes, all these combinations, all this stuff, nothing changed for better or for worse. They won a game. It felt like rolling the dice. They lost the game. That's the way it goes.
You had Romanov and Dobson were really good. And then I guess Pelech and Pulick are pretty good still when paired together. But again, they've had kind of up and down seasons. But yeah, outside of Romanov and Dobson, the defense has been kind of a huge mess. Although Riley Aho hasn't been that bad, but you know, again, they're going to go into a playoff series with those guys. And now it's like, is that really who you want? So we'll have to see what happens. But you know, this is exactly what we were just talking about. Like, we can be happy. They made it. They're done. We got the X. Great. But, you know, come Thursday, we're going to have to sit back and go, what are we now? What like now? What does this mean now? You know, oh man, yeah. Now we're going to watch these guys. I mean, these guys play a team that we all hate. I hate playing in Raleigh. As I've said on Anxiety, Rod Brind'Amour has that team and that fan base coached to make that not only a hostile environment for the other team, but for refs. They absolutely have conditioned everybody to make the refs public enemy number one in that place. And anytime a hurricane gets looked at long enough, they want to call. Anytime they get a penalty called against them, the refs are, boo, you refs, you suck. And it's really vocal. And if I was a ref, I would refuse to work those games. Like, it's just, it's a hostile environment. And it makes playing impossible. And when you're a team with bad special teams like the Islanders, you know, hopefully their penalty killing luck is now, you know, permanently good. But it's going to be tough. And so, right now I'm happy. I'll be happy tomorrow and Wednesday probably. That'll be a fun game against Pittsburgh. But once the calendar flips the postseason, man, I don't know. My appetite for watching another series with the Hurricanes is very, 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 very low.
I'll say this, and I want to lump a couple things together because we really didn't get into the Ranger games, and the Laviolette stuff was very funny to me, and obviously how you guys handled that was great, and all of that. I think about this winning streak and everything that seems to have been going right, and this really. The one of the moments other than tonight where the rest of the teams won they really didn't help the Islanders was my mom and stepdad were in town and we were watching the Detroit and the Rangers play.
Okay.
And for that night I was a Rangers fan.
Yes.
And they were going in they're both Ranger fans. And so we were watching the game and I was very excited about that. And I was like, man, if they could just win tomorrow. They can just get it. They can just figure it out. It totally changes things. Like that was really the moment. Yeah. And thinking about a team that just, in their own words, is like, oh, it just didn't go our way. It kind of has started to, right? They're finally getting that. And as I was watching the game the game last Tuesday against the Rangers, and obviously Dobson destroys Trocheck, the grease ball, and unfortunately it's a Banajad thing. You know, I didn't like to see that. But even for the Islanders, I was like, man, I'm surprised they didn't just call it because it's the Islanders, and that's just how it goes. And so I'm watching the game, and I'm between both of them, and I had to get up and go to the bathroom, and I just hit him on the back, and I went, "Dem's the breaks," and I just got up. And you know, the more that I thought about that was, God damn, finally, it really is the breaks. And they didn't get the call. Dobson wasn't suspended or anything. He's hurt. He's not playing, but at least he's not suspended.
Right.
And really from that moment a few weeks ago, in hindsight, I'm more excited about the playoffs. Like, all right, at least lose in 6-7 games and just have a good series. You know, you don't want a feel bad win or like, of course they lost that game. They played like horseshit, you know, like, oh, you know what? That was a great, that the 2013 Pens Islanders series. That was a great series. Yes, I'm upset the Islanders lost,
right?
But that was a good series. They really gave it 100%.
Yeah.
Unlike game 7 in 2015 against the Capitals, where you're like, are you,
remember that.
My God,
it was awful.
Clearly I'm over it, but like, that's the kind of like that, like the dichotomy of the thing. Yeah. My feeling now, if there was, you know, obviously they're winning games, but it's kind of this underlying thing of they're finally getting the breaks. Like things are, they're not just complaining about not making their own luck. They're kind of starting to do it on their own. And on top of that, just get a little bit of the breaks from the refs or whatever.
Well, that, again, that comes from playing in a way that allows you to get breaks, you know, when they're so passive and they're so sloppy that the breaks don't come to you. Like you got to make, you know, in the words of John Bon Jovi, you got to make your own breaks, you know? So like it's when you're playing a little, you know, they don't have the horses to play, you know, full blast, full court press all the time. But like when you are more forceful and you are trying to take it to the other team every once in a while, you can make those breaks. So we'll see. I mean, here's the way I look at a playoff series. The Islanders, you know, they're going to be good for at least one blowout game. Like they're going to get blown out at some
game two somewhere.
Right. Yeah. They're going to lose 6-0. Like, it's just, that's the way they always do. But you also know that they're good for probably one, if not two, overtime wins, because again, that's the Islander way, right? What's more Islanders than playoff overtime? So that's going to happen as well. And, you know, again, to me, the Hurricanes, they're obviously a very good team, but I have no playoff series have the Islanders gone into with the, this will be the third one now. And I thought, oh man, this is, they're going to get their ass handed to them. Like every single time I thought, oh, well, they might be able to do something against these guys, but it's not going to be easy. And in order to do it, they're going to have to change a lot of how they've played all season long. And
The goal scoring is really going to need to come alive,
because
yes, they can really demoralize this team.
Yeah.
By just popping a few, like if Palmieri can just keep going, if Nelson needs to come alive the last couple of games, they need some bounces for sure, but they just need pucks to the net. Just hit the net. You can't all be Ryan Pulock, you know, oh, it was 108 mile an hour slap shot. Fantastic. Yeah. You broke the glass in the corner. It wasn't ever going towards the net.
Right.
The goalie could have just left the net altogether and been fine.
That means you, Ryan Pulock, like this guy, he hits the net maybe 10 times a year. And he, you know, if he could start hitting it in the playoffs, then they're going to be in good shape.
Yeah. Or Romanov has a good shot. Just they need to actually set that up. Dobson, obviously, you know, get a few here and there.
Romanov almost had a goal tonight, but apparently it didn't cross the red line, the goal line, because it was like on its edge. So. But
yeah, and he was up to, that would have been his eighth goal, and that was a regular thing for Pulock.
Yeah.
He was in 9-10 goals a year, easy 36 points or whatever on the regular, and obviously he's dropped off, but you got to find it in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean,
like you have to at least aspire to that a little bit, even as a defenseman. Like you got to make your mark in the offensive zone, and the Hurricanes don't really have the goalies to. I mean, Kochekov is good. He's not consistent.
Yeah. Right.
I've watched games. He was in Syracuse for one game. He was loaned here. And I was like, this guy does not belong in this league. He was so far and away better. He did not break a sweat. And I think he got a shutout.
But then the other two guys are incredibly injury prone. So, I mean, you know, they make one save in the wrong direction and all of a sudden they're, you know, out for a week and a half or a month. So, yeah, I don't know. To me, they should have a chance, but it's going to depend a lot on how they play. And if they come out and start winging the puck around and not having a care as to where it ends up, and they end up, you know, getting caught in their own zone for a while, they're gonna lose pretty quickly. I mean, they could also lose in four straight overtime games. Like, that would also not surprise me in the slightest.
Oh, yeah.
If that happened to, you know, so.
And then we'll have to hear about, oh, we were just, you know, three or four bounces away.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and we're so close. Right.
Yeah, this time next week or by Wednesday of next week, it could be very different. That's the beauty and the curse of the playoffs, I suppose, is that it comes crashing down pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But let's get there first. I appreciate you coming on. We finally did get into Islander stuff, so I'm happy that we didn't just accidentally get into deep dive just scanning eBay, not for Islander gear, but for Nintendo Black Sabbath records. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. And you know, I know we talked about it last week, but it was a little last moment. James was at the game tonight, and I'm out tomorrow, and I'm afraid he's just gonna have his kid at any moment. So that's what he's like. I asked him about doing it last night, and he's like, I could have a kid. And I was like, all right, I need a plan B. I need to actually lock this down.
I'm happy to be the plan B. Whenever James and his wife have their new baby, and that's how it is. That's the glamour of podcasting, is you got to get it done some way, one way or another. And yeah, we try and be as consistent as possible, but the times we've recorded, the days we've recorded, the things that we've done all over the place, jumping through hoops, it's nothing new, and it's part of the gig. But no, I'm happy to be here. This is always a lot of fun. Again, I'm available. You know, you got me now. I was expecting to do it tomorrow night, but now I got the night off, I guess. But Mike and I will be back on Thursday, and then we'll see where we're going. I mean, now we're all stuck. Now we all have to wait for a memo to come out from the NHL before we all know when we can record again. So we're all going to be trying to figure things out from here on out.
Yeah, we do need a big crossover episode at some point. I've been thinking about that.
Sure.
We wanted to do a live event. I don't know if we have the... The following quite like you and Mike do. You have a few more years on us, but
You never know. Do it. I'll be there. I'll come.
Well, I'd love to do like a big round table with, you know, Through the Island and Light and Anxiety and us.
That would be fun.
Even Hockey Night or whoever wants to be there, just kind of show up.
We should do it at Hockey Night Studio because it's nice. That's a nice setup that Sean has over there.
There you go. Just like bring your own microphone and plug it in.
Yeah, right.
So thanks again. Where can everyone find you? Assuming that for some reason, the three people that don't follow both of us that are listening to here that aren't just psychopaths and listen to every Islanders podcast like the both of us.
Yeah, you can find us, Islanders Anxiety, everywhere you find podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Spotify, YouTube Music, wherever. And then we also have Patreon, patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety for ad-free episodes, bonus stuff, and a whole lot more. And then we also do Weird Islanders, which we talked about a little while ago. Listen to John's episode about Trevor Linden. We just did one about Randy Robitaille. We've had three great seasons, and every single one is a different rabbit hole, and so they're a lot of fun. And so we try and have a good time, even though this team does its best to make sure that we have about as miserable a time as possible. But our goal is always fun, as much as we can, you know, squeeze out of it. So
yeah, Weird Islanders is at least nostalgic pain. It's like, oh, when I was a kid, I had that same feeling that I do right now. I was like, okay, maybe this is bad, but
it's like now I can laugh about it, but back then it wasn't funny, you know?
Right. So. It's kind of like in 15 years from now, thinking about this season,
right?
I really wish I didn't remember Bortuzzo. Actually,
well, yeah, he's easily the weirdest Islander on the roster, and he's definitely going to get a Weird Islanders episode at some point. Like, I highly doubt this is going to be a multi-season tour for him, so I would soak in as much Bortuzzo content as you could possibly find this season, because it might be it for him. So you never know. Maybe he'll have a big playoff. Maybe he'll be a big playoff hero. You never know. He'll be the Alan Quine of the 2024 Islanders.
That's right. That's a good callback. Right. As the Islanders beat the Devils tonight, as I'm sure you know, we made it to the end of the episode. We talked a lot about the playoffs. Obviously, they made it. Not as exciting as the last time they beat the Devils. Although the connection is that not the starting goalie did it for them. Although Varlama was far from just being a backup.
Right.
Dubowicz almost to the day, about a week, five or 6 days later from 2007. So it was exciting. This was not nearly as exciting either. It was a pretty boring game.
The Islanders actually tracked down Wade Dubowicz, and on Twitter there is a video from him congratulating the Islanders on making the playoffs. So I'm going to watch it. It's pretty impressive.
Did they do that beforehand? They would do that to the hockey gods?
I don't know. We'll have to find out. We'll have to investigate and find out how this came about. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't even know where he's at. He's wearing like a bright neon coveralls. Look like he's working on an oil rig or something. I don't know what's going on, but we'll have to see. But that's how you know it's a big deal. So that's pretty cool.
Wade Dubowicz came back. That's the ticket here. That'll be the playoff hero. If we need him ringing the horn or whatever, the Islanders press the button for the go horn or something. The Islanders don't have the hurricane siren. No. All right. Please rate, review, subscribe wherever you listen or watch the show. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, YouTube at Nesman Hockey. You can find James' work when he's returned to the beat, although the Devils season is now over, at New Jersey Hockey Now. And in my best James impression, until next time, let's go Isles.